Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. It's so nice to have you with us this evening on this January the 6th on the west coast of the United States or in other parts of the world, including the east and central time zones of the U.S. It's now the 7th of January, 2009. Seth, my engineer, if you can please take care of the sound, I got an echo. Yeah, and then it just disappeared. Okay, very good. Thank you, Seth. Still a trace there, if you can maybe check on that for me. Well, we are at a crossroads on this show. As many of you know, I have been on BBS for now 13 months and 1 week today. And you could add a couple of extra days, I guess, 13 months and maybe 10 days. And I had the great fortune early on in my radio career to become friendly with tonight's guest and to have him on my show several times. Back when we were doing three-hour and regular two-hour interviews, he graciously gave up his very valuable time to bring forth some very unique information, and I've grown since meeting him in many ways, and I think in some ways he'll probably share his ever-expanding consciousness and growth in a similar fashion. I happen to have lived in the town where he was born for about 2 years when I was working with the Swiss TV radio orchestra in Zurich, Switzerland. And unfortunately, we didn't meet at that time. I stopped to think of what my life might have become had we met back then. But as it always works out, eventually paths cross at the right time and for the right purpose. And this is someone who is very endeared to me, as well as many who have read his books, Zen of Stars, Foreseen, and his newest book, Light Seeds, Futures of Planet Earth, have been inspirational to many. They are replete with answers to the many, many questions that puzzle a chaotic world. He brings a sense of peace, a sense of understanding, a sense of knowledge, a sense of action, and purpose, and most of all, love through his writings and through his speaking. Tonight we are going to blaze some new trails, and with that, I'm not going to make you wait any longer. This has been highly anticipated all around the world, and I am very honored to welcome back to Evident Footprints, Mr. Michael St. Clair. Michael, welcome.
Hi, how are you doing, Don? This is great to be together again on this show.
I'm very honored and humbled to have you on the show. You know how much I appreciate your work and all the things that you're doing, and we're going to get into that big time tonight. I can guarantee you. Happy New Year to you, by the way.
Yes, to you too, to the listeners too. This is the big year of action, the year of transformation, so we have to make it now.
Well, I had invited you a couple of weeks ago, and you accepted rather readily, and I was very excited about that. And, of course, BBS Radio and Don Newsom, even our engineer Seth was excited. And of course, the listening audience hearing me speak about your appearance tonight is something that got the listening audience very excited as well. And so I see a lot of people coming together this evening to share something very important. Now, you had recently done an interview with a Seattle station. Madeline Gerwick, and last night you were on Coast to Coast with George Norrie. I got to hear part of that show after my broadcast, and it was very, very interesting and very enlightening. If I can use that word in the proper way, we're going to talk about even enlightenment. So I just wanted to congratulate you on the step that you took last night in your career as a public speaker.
Well, thank you very much. I think they really liked it from what we heard. I mean, my sites went down for a few hours. We had like a million hits in 2 hours or so. This is really unheard of. So there must have been a huge audience, and probably also tonight, because they would see right away on the website that you were going to be next. I don't know why all this happened all at the same time. These are these mysterious things about timing in life. This came about with Mrs. Gerwick, and then you heard about it, and all of a sudden everything happened all at the same time. So I guess now is the moment. With Jupiter in the first degree of Aquarius, we're beginning really a phase of networking for the whole world, and of course the radio waves, internet, all this is ruled by Aquarius. And I guess this is the time to explain to people what is happening now and how people can really organize themselves. Because the things that you and I talked about for over a year now are really happening, and it is happening faster even than I thought it would come. I have to admit, it is much faster. So we're in it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we refer to this phenomenon as waking up, and people are making those choices themselves, obviously. We're putting the message out. You, in your distinct way, through astrology, cosmology, and a futuristic look at where we are now, and you're not really trying to convince anyone of this. You're just basically demonstrating what you've been observing. Isn't that right?
Yes, I believe that it's not my job to wake people up. I believe no one can wake up another person in that sense. That word is anyway a bit strange. I feel everyone is grown up enough to know when you look around that the changes are now with us, and that we need to do whatever comes next. And I wanted to, if I may do that, read you a small, very small excerpt, a quote by Krishnamurti for the listeners who are now tuning in. And he once said at the beginning of a talk of this that you are now listening to me and you are not making an effort to pay attention. You're just listening. And if there is truth in what you hear, you will find a remarkable change taking place in you, a change that is not premeditated or wished for, a transformation, a complete revolution in which the truth alone is master and not the creations of your mind. And if I may suggest it, you should listen in that way to everything, not only to what I am saying, but also to what other people are saying, to the birds, to the whistle of a locomotive, to the noise of the bus going by. You will find that the more you listen to everything, the greater is the silence. And that silence is then not broken by the noise. It is only when you are resisting something, when you are putting up a barrier between yourself and that to which you do not want to listen, it is only then that there is struggle. That's the quote.
Yes, that's very profound.
This quote comes from a service that someone who sends out quotations of the talks of Krishnamurti's, they come out it. In a 24-hour cycle in an email service, and that came in yesterday. I found that very interesting because these were these 2 days that we're talking. I think what he says here is really important, that the transformation comes from within you, from within the listener, just by listening, and there is no effort needed in that. So we're going into a very serious time now. Okay, we have to say this is serious, what's going on in 3D. And at the same time, this is a great moment for everyone to grab the opportunities that come with it and to do something of it for their lives.
In respect to what you said, the quote you just read from Krishnamurti, I think it's appropriate, possibly, just for a moment or two, that we speak about his teaching. And what comes to mind is the meeting that he had with a group of people. I believe it was in London. There wasn't really much information other than to sort of analyze the characters that were there. They were speaking English, and it seemed to be a group of people that that he was, as he discussed it, they were deliberating. They were agreeing to speak about any topic and face it. And in particular, the topic was, is there life after death? And so you had this Buddhist slant, you had a Hindu slant, you had a Christian slant. He honored all aspects and talked about the consciousness of humanity or the awareness of humanity or the condition of humanity being in this stream, and that all the people on the earth make up that stream, and that as soon as one begins to inquire as to the reality of that stream, they have already begun the liberation process, to which leads to insight, which leads to a deeper understanding, as if now you can sort of be outside the stream looking at what the stream is doing. And I wondered if you would comment on that a little bit, because that concept is going to make it very easy for the listening audience to understand the things that we talk about tonight.
Yes, you're right. You see, I think what he was trying to say, and that's very difficult, you know, we're not even supposed to interpret him, for good reason, so I don't like to do that too much. I don't like to put now words on his words, but basically what he said was that if one or two, a handful of people would change, radically change their mindsets, change the way we do things, we view the world, because we are part of the whole, therefore we are able to actually change the stream itself. So if a few minds shift slightly, it will actually change how all of mankind proceeds, if one can summarize this like this. I would simply say that the fact that you, Don, and I, that we are here tonight, today, talking about this, the fact that we're saying these things, is the change. This shows that the change is happening right now. And these discussions are taking place all around the world. There is a certain revival of Krishnamurti's teachings taking place now because the technology has changed in a way that his talks are available on YouTube. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of videos of him where you see him talk half an hour, where he answers to people. So people can listen to him in original words, watch him and listen to exactly what he said, minus any interpretations. And that is really fabulous that we have this now, 20 to 40 years later, to be able to actually see these tapes. And that's easier than to read the books, because his books are, of course, difficult material in the sense that if you read even the smallest book, which was probably his best book, Freedom from the Known, which is a small book, but when you read one page, you will need probably a day to think about that page.
Yes.
That you should not operate in thought. Anyway, so what I'm saying is that these movements now are coming to pass again, and certainly I would advise people to begin watching these videos, maybe read one of his books, because all of the questions that people have for the times ahead were really answered by Krishnamurti. He did not want to tell people what to do. He taught them a way to look at their questions in such a way that people would find their own way, because he maintained that you cannot organize truth. There is no such thing as spirituality, enlightenment, awakening, all that. Those are just words, and it's all made up. You know, this is all invented stuff. So if you carefully listen to Krishnamurti, you will come away really questioning all this movement in which we are, because there's a lot of nonsense being talked about these subjects nowadays. So that's why I prefer that people go back to the source and just watch his videos or read the book and stay directly with him. Well, anyway, the fact that Krishnamurti said and wrote what he stated could really only have taken place if the future, our future of mankind, had already achieved some sort of significant leverage and change. And it means that this timeline does not go in the wrong direction. So we are not turning towards a dead end now. As bad as things, you know, look like, and as bad as it seems in 3D reality, some of our stronger minds still hold together a sort of a flight path for humanity, which is revolutionary in the sense of being able to navigate the unknown. And so we are close to being able to navigate the mystery of those things, of that which we do not know about.
Mm-hmm. The reason I brought that up, so just for clarification, for the listening audience, especially those that haven't heard this type of teaching or this type of communication, and is that, yes, this is radio, number one, so we can't show pictures at currently. We are moving in that direction on this show, where we will be able to show things to our listeners. But for the sake of highlighting some of the words that he used, he focused on individuality, or the individual, awareness, attention, the word focus itself, communication, and insight. And he stressed those words over and over and over again, no matter what he was relaying to his audience, if it was Dr. Anderson in California. I think he did 18 TV shows, those hour shows you were speaking about, and very,
yes,
very deep
PBS
conversation. Yes. And then when he spoke to a group of people, you could see that the people were listening. We're speaking about, and I mentioned the stream because that's the chaos. I hear that often, especially when someone like yourself, as someone who is an astrologer or a psychic, immediately people want to know answers, and so they come to us to give them the answers. When what Krishnamurti is saying, and what you and I and many others like us who are carrying this torch for him, in a sense, are saying, is the answers are inside of us. The identification with ego is the system here, and it's contributed to all the chaos that we have. So people, in trying to liberate themselves from this matrix, immediately try to create another system, if you get my meaning. They're leaving one reality, or their intention is to discover themselves and recreate a new reality, but then they want to structure that reality just like the old reality.
That's right. He explained in a way that people, the way they were conditioned, will never get out of the matrix if they carry on that same type of thinking. I believe what he said, if one could summarize, it is very hard to summarize 60, 70 years of his life, you know, because he worked and spoke and wrote for 60 or 70 years. He died at age 91. I think what he was saying was, essentially what he was communicating was, we are the world, we, each of us, is part of mankind, each of us is society, is economy, is the system, so we must not complain about the system, the controllers, all that stuff outside, because we are it. We created this whole awful stuff that we're talking about. And therefore, he said, we have to first bring our house in order, each one. So if you can have your situation in order, I can do that for myself, and those who are listening to us, each one does that. Well, then, overnight, without doing anything more, we have created a new society. So the work is in our own self, not outside. that was in essence one of the biggest points he made. He made many big points, but this was one of them in very, very short summary.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
It's up to us to clean up our act, and then when enough people do that, a new society has already begun. We don't need to restructure anything new because we are it.
Yes. Okay. Now, there's so many things I want to cover here.
Go ahead.
In your writings, you speak about radiant zones, this represents places, but we are the place in a sense, and so in a sense, are we not also radiant zones? And would you define that for the listeners?
Yes. Okay. After having then studied Krishnamurti for, you know, like 6-7 years now intensively, and also James, the creator of Wingmakers, who I would sort of situate in the lineage of Krishnamurti, if one can say that, roughly speaking. Anyway, I took this then to the next step because we're now in 2009, and I knew in 2006 and 7 that most probably things would look in the way they're going to look like now. We can then later talk a little bit about that, the 3D reality. And I looked at this sort of in a more militaristic way from my old training, and I said, okay, what are we going to have to do because this is getting ugly out there? So I figured out if we can, first of all, become our own radiant zone, as you said, we are it. Okay, as we just had said before, we begin with ourselves. And we radiate this energy of being the change that we want to see, then we can create small communities and network together. That means that each one who listens has a few best friends, a handful of people that are somewhat on the same page, and they together can form a small community and go into an area that I would call an area of little or no human activity. In other words, to move outside of the cities into rural areas, into the countryside, higher up, away from the coast. That's just for now to avoid the worst of the earth changes, but simply to be able to create something new together and then form what would then become geographically a radiant zone in which you can begin to create a small microeconomy where scientists can work together, builders can do their projects, etc., where writers can retreat and do their work, advisors, healers, teachers, etc. New small little schools can be formed in communities for homeschooling, etc. I mean, there are no limits to what is then possible. This is kind of the idea that we would have, say, 400 or 500 such small radiant zones all over the globe who then quietly begin to live a new life in peace. While at the same time, of course, all of these earth changes are happening and the whole economic and political stuff goes the way it will go. I mean, we have to know that we are in this reality where a number of things are going to happen that are not very pretty, and we are trying to stay sort of aloof of that if we can. That's not going to work for everyone. Some people will have to be, because it is their destiny or whatever, they have to be in the cities and do their work there. So it's not for everyone that you can just move out of the way of so-called trouble. Some will have to create radiant zones right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's kind of the concept. And
yes,
this idea of radiant zones is also mirrored by Cliff High, the author of halfpasthuman.com. He's the famous time monk. And he foresees, in the midst of all the other things that he's also seeing, that indeed a number of people, a movement comes about that he calls BOG life, B-O-G, Beyond Organized Government Life, and that people will indeed move away from the cities and begin to create their own communities. He sees this as becoming a large trend over the next year or two, so large even that in 2 years he sees it in the linguistics showing up for 2010, end of 2009 and 2010, that even mainstream media will pick this up. So we're talking mm-hmm. about something very real, of which we are just the last precursors. This has already begun, okay? There are a lot of people who do this already. I know because they ask me for advice. So there exist plenty of projects around the world that wants to do this kind of work that we were just talking about.
Yes. Now, some people who are contemplating this are still trapped, let's say, or locked in this grip of fear. And when they begin to intellectualize these things, like you talk about new technologies, new ways of producing power, is the word a scientist Jim Murray likes to use, because the energy is always there. It's what you make of the energy that produces the power. So, the technologies that you're speaking about have been historically suppressed through the system. This is why I brought up this concept of the stream in the beginning, that one must first seek to recognize who they are and where they fit into this whole thing. Let's say, inspires one to become radiant in that sense, and then easily can see the radiant zone is a different reality. You're creating something independent of all of the other control systems. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's right. It's important not to look too much outside of what is going on, and it's important not to do this as a reaction to what is going on. This is something we should all have been doing for a while. No matter what, because we have to create a better Earth, we have to create new architecture. You know, we live on this beautiful planet and build these monstrous architectural, horrible things, square stuff that is bad for the human being. We need to live in rounded structures, dome structures, circular structures, etc., because the energy is better, and so on. So we need to do this because we need to do it, not because of what's going on. We need to start anew. We have to begin a whole new beginning of living a completely different life and do this no matter what. Only now, with what is happening, it's almost as if we have no other choice, unless we want to, you know, be in the mess that's going to unfold, because it's going to be in your face now as everything will collapse, because the currencies, the economy, the system actually is about to collapse within the next, say, 12 to 18 months, and the logistics may go down, even electricity in some places may go down. So you're looking at a pretty rough situation out there. So what I'm saying is, it's an almost no-brainer at this point. There's no choice anymore in some way, but this is not the reason why we have to do it. You understand what I'm saying? I'm trying to say, yes, to the listener, don't do this out of fear or because you want to go away from trouble. That's not a good motivation. Just to survive is not good enough, because that's kind of selfish. We want to do this because we really feel now is time to create a whole new society, beginning in our own selves. And it's enough if 5-6 people per place start this together with a few families, and that creates a little village of, say, you know, 10-20 people, a few houses, and then you have a few communities like that who create their little micro economies together and begin to live new. And they will probably use gold and silver as barter mechanisms, because we're still in this real world, of course. So this will be a whole new beginning. That can include high tech, like your friend was saying, Murray. This is a matter of how we use energy then. So I'm not saying that we're going back to Stone Age type living, not at all. I want to see a beautiful new technology come about. It is simply that realistically I feel we will have to do this outside of the stream of the others to begin mm-hmm. with anyway, because things will just not look good when the cities go down. Temporarily, at least, you know.
Yes. Well, because of this rise in consciousness, and the numbers are increasing, and I get this in email and calls into the show. Believe it or not, not that many people call into the show. They say they don't really care to interrupt the flow of information that's coming forth. So that's a compliment to the guests that are on the show. In the respect of people living in these communities, you know, everyone has a particular ability or a particular talent, that they can contribute to the well-being and to the functionality of these communities that you're talking about. So we wouldn't even necessarily have to have money per se, would we?
No, actually you can start on your own with a few friends. Sure, you need some sort of resources to find some land, or the way to go about it really is that you find someone who has the land, so the land is there, that doesn't not need to be bought, and then you build on it. You have a builder friend or someone who knows how to build, and he donates his time. You have a healer, people who know about oriental medicine or alternative healing, shamanic healings, etc., and you have teachers. You need, of course, a smaller group of people who can replace what the system had. You understand? You have to continue life. You have to be able to have children that grow up in this, that become early on part of this. Children have to then live as part of the group of adults. It begins right there with a whole new way of how children are brought up and what the role is that children have. In other words, I'm describing what amounts to almost a modern shamanic society.
Yes.
So, no, you don't need money necessary to do this. Many people say to me, oh, well, I don't know how to do this because I have my job, I have my mortgage, and I don't know how to get out of here, etc. That's because people lack imagination. You see, the population worldwide is dumbed down so badly and has been controlled for so long that it has stifled imagination and the innovative sense of blazing new trail and just think new thoughts and be able to, you know, conceive of totally new ways of living. So people are a little bit stunned. And so now we need to get out of this and imagine this in a completely new way. And this is totally possible. It is being done. I mean, I know places in California, in Oregon, in North Carolina, here in Europe, in Germany, in France. I mean, this is not something that is utopian, you know, this is actually being done. So it's a matter of people who are interested in this kind of concept that we're talking about, that they get together, that they, you know, connect on the web of life, on the internet, and find friends and talk to each other and find solutions and move to places they feel attracted to and begin working together. And of course, this requires a completely new understanding of what life is all about.
Yes. In a cosmological sense, there's a lot happening with energies in our solar system, in our galaxy, and I suspect in the rest of the universe, just because of how what happens here or elsewhere affects everything else in that unknown way. You wonder what science really knows about it, what we're being told, but yet it's something that we ourselves can discover, which you have proven many times, and actually I have in some senses too. I've, for example, I've predicted in order the banks that were going to start going under, and it's been occurring exactly like that. In fact, the Madoff affair is directly attributed to the New York Bank of Mellon, which was the next one on my list. So these truths come to us in very strange ways. It's not that I'm looking in a crystal ball. It becomes very apparent through the things that I've researched, the things that I've written about, to draw the attention to these issues, to say, look, folks, this is what's going on. Are you going to accept this, or are you going to participate possibly in recreating something new? And I don't ask people to believe what I write. I ask them to do the research. I ask them to inform themselves. And yet, whatever we do with our mind outside of the mind, and as Krishnamurti taught over and over again, we have to get out of this thinking and analyzing, because analysis produces paralysis, I think he said, innumerable times. And it's really true that you can sit there thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking and not go into action and actually do something. Yet these energies coming in are impulsing people to do things. It's as if our DNA is changing, and on some level. Now, I don't know if sitting on the couch watching the football game with a bag of potato chips and a six-pack of beer is going to make someone become more conscious because of what's happening in the rest of the universe.
No, you might. I mean, we are at the point now where analysis and thinking and fact-finding and gathering knowledge and all that, that's over. This precisely is also old paradigm. Plus, we have no more time. We have the changes that are coming now at the end of January, now 2009, February, this winter and into May, June, when we have the big conjunction between Jupiter, Chiron, Neptune at the end of Aquarius, and all of this year 2009, is moving so fast, and the changes are coming at such an extremely high frequency that we will have a hard time even keeping up with what is coming down. So you might just as well begin to tune out from that, although you have to keep track, of course. I'm not saying you should not look at what's going on. You have to look at it sort of with a peripheral eye to see where you are in the stream of time. But you need to now do something about it. That's why I said in the beginning, this is the year of action. I have a client, a friend of mine. He's an investment banker who works on new technologies in the medical business and very advanced green type solutions. And he has been for, 20, 30 years on the edge of financing free energies and, very advanced stuff, and had his fair share of trouble to, be stopped by powers that be who did not want certain projects to go ahead, etc. So, I mean, this man has been on the front lines of this kind of stuff that we're talking about. And he said to me consistently in the last few weeks, he said, the time for talk is over. We need to do things now, and we have not time. We need to get going right away because we're really in the end game here now. And the same soundbite I hear echoed from the research by halfpasthuman.com, Cliff High, is saying the exact same thing. It is going to come so fast that we have no choice. I would almost say now I don't like to say this, but we have practically only one more way to go, which is to become immediately self-sufficient and self-responsible and create our own solutions. And we have to do this fast. So this is pretty serious what we're saying here now.
Okay. Well, okay, from your qualifications as an astrologer, and you've been practicing astrology, if I'm not mistaken, from age 5 or 6. And
From 5, 6, I was able to see stuff because I was just psychic, or I was using this gift or whatever it was. I was able just to be aware that I was in tune with what's going on and coming, and I was studying what time is about and all that stuff. But really, I studied it, say, as of age when I could study, really understand, say, 12 to 15, I was really into it. And then after age 20, 21, I began to do this professionally as a side, as a hobby professionally, meaning that I had then really studied all the books that I could find about it. So I was professional by then, yes. So you want to ask me about astrology, in what way it mirrors the situation now?
Well, I wanted to discuss that a little bit so that as we speak about it, that, as it comes up during the course of our conversation, people will have a bit of an understanding. Now, we're not speaking about horoscopes in newspapers that you get on the weekend, or sometimes I think now they have them every day, or even online for that matter. We're talking about something a much higher science than just interpreting compatibilities between people of different astrological signs. In fact, I know that you don't particularly even care to go into that with people. There's not really a whole lot of credibility. It's another control system, as far as I'm concerned. When somebody prints, well, Sagittarians are only compatible with a Geminis or Aries, or I'm just using that as a hypothetical example.
Yes, and astrology in that sense is another matrix, as a matter of fact, is what I'm saying. And Krishnamurti would also have laughed about it. It's just another system. However, there is something to the fact that the way the planets are aligning shows and can be used as a mirror to explain what's going on. It's mainly, to me, an explanation mechanism. So what is going on now, this year and the next 2 years, I can take you and the listeners through that if you want, briefly. Is that what you would like to do?
Yes, I'd like you to maybe just briefly explain in a very general and concise way what these things mean, so that as people are listening to this, it's not considered, well, this is hocus pocus, or this is a cult. It may be a cult in the sense of being hidden. You have to study it, and you have to really understand the principles behind this. But the impact that certain planets have on us, let's say, or the alignments, what types of energies influence things that are happening here.
Okay, let's keep it practical and apply to what is now, okay? 2009, okay. 10, 11. Let's look now at now and the next, say, 2 years, because this is where it's all happening.
Okay.
So what we have going on now that is relatively rare or important, because it doesn't happen frequently, first of all, is an opposition between Saturn and Uranus. Okay, so Saturn represents time, structure, the status quo, manifestation, form, and it's the form-bringing planet, and this planet finds itself now in Virgo. And Uranus is in Pisces, across from it. In other words, there's an opposition going on, and these oppositions, they happen about every 40 years. So the last time we had this going on was in the mid-60s. So what goes on when Uranus and Saturn are in opposition is that this mirrors down societal breakup and a sort of revolutionary feeling. It also can speak to us about worker strikes and people being unhappy with what's going on in society and with the way they're being paid and remunerated, etc. So when you had it going on in the middle of the 60s, it was in the opposite signs. Uranus was then in Virgo and Saturn was in Pisces. Now it's the other way around, okay? So what's going to happen now is that you will see social unrest, unhappiness of the people, of the workers, and you will see that the people will become aware that their work is not being appreciated and becoming aware that they really are in this matrix more so than ever. So that's one aspect. I have to take the listeners through each aspect, because a planetary makeup at any moment is made of at least 10, 12 positions. And when you make then the angles, the geometric angles, you can come up to about 100 such variables. So it's rather complex. So you've got to bear with me for a moment, okay? The next thing that is completely new, for the first time in 250 years, is Pluto has now entered Capricorn. Okay, Capricorn's the sign that is ruled by Saturn, of which we talked before. Capricorn stands also for time, structure, geometry, architecture, society, government, institutions like economy, etc. All that is the domain of Capricorn, where we're now with the Sun in Capricorn. So Pluto, this outermost small ice ball planetoid, has entered this sign for the first time early last year, went back a little bit and then forward. Okay, each planet has a little bit of a retro phase and forward. We won't go into too much detail, but anyway, suffice it to say that the last time Pluto was in Capricorn was between 1762 and 1775, more or less. I'm saying these things by heart now. I have to go a little fast. So what I'm trying to get across to the listener is that the last time we had this going on was, in fact, during the American Revolution. At the same time, we had then and have now also Uranus moving on in the next 2 years into Aries, where it blazes an absolute new trail and completely rips down all social structures. The two planets, Pluto and Uranus, then form a 90-degree aspect, which is very rough for society, for economy, and also for earthquakes. One sees in the studies, over longer-term studies of 2,000 years or more, that when such aspects come into play, this can also mirror. It's not that it causes, I want people to understand, there's no cause and effect. It's just that when you have certain planetary alignments, you can see in the mundane world on Earth that certain type of patterns of events, trends and human behavior happens. That's the interesting part. So anyway, then you have over the next 2 years this, what the astrologers call the T-square, which means it's a formation that looks like a T, or simply you have one planet at the 3 o'clock position of a clock, the other one across in the 9 o'clock position, and the one up in the middle in a 12 o'clock position. And that forms essentially this geometric structure that brings tension. And because it is formed of the outer planets, Pluto, Uranus, Saturn, this is very long-standing because these planets take quite a while to move. Pluto only does 2 degrees per year. So this is a long, ongoing thing. That is why we're talking about 7 to 10 years, okay, into 2014, 15, even 2020. Saturn will move in line of Pluto by the year 2020. Financial astrologers have seen that the cycles of economy are always related to the function of Saturn and Jupiter and the other planets. And so to make the long story short, we can say that this recession that we're now in will last at least 10 years. It is only after 2020 that we will begin to see a new economy and a whole new way of life, economically speaking, that one could say things are picking up again. So now, between now and the end of this year, 2009, we have a few more very interesting, I mean, unusual, rare alignments, one of which is a triple conjunction between Jupiter, you can see that visibly, and Chiron and Neptune, all in the same point. The last time we had this going on was in 1945, just about at the time when the bombs were dropped on the Japanese people. What will happen out of that, we don't really know. It was then in another sign, so it can't be compared. It's now in Aquarius. I would estimate that it being at the end of Aquarius means by the end of May, and then again by the end of December, there will be a huge worldwide movement of, one could say, hope, faith, believing in the future. It leads to a certain elated feeling, but there can also be some sort of an illusion. So one has to be careful. While it will be very positive in one way, optimistic, it can also lead to some sort of a mass delusion, particularly when it has to do with topics of so-called spirituality, etc. So when you put all of this into the mix, you receive then a psychological climate that is quite extreme, that goes from, you know, from the best to the worst, almost. And then you have an economy that crashes under these aspects. And in fact, the entire political landscape, the whole system, the whole human underpinning of human systems, government, society, schools, university, I mean, everything about everything is then in question and falls apart. So that's what's happening between June of this year and July of 2010 is basically a complete meltdown, in other words. And that's not a bad thing, because you have to first rip down the old houses on a piece of land if you want to build new ones. And the ripping down process is not very pretty to look at. It gets dusty and ugly. But before the old structures are carted away, you cannot build anything new. So do you follow me? So this is kind of what we're looking at. And we're entering this phase right now. We're in it, actually. We're already inside of the first alignments that I described. And this can also lead to earthquakes and volcanoes and tectonic plate shifting. And we will see extremely unusual waves. They have already started in the atolls in Papua New Guinea, in France already. There have been 2 or 3 reportings, small reports, but of very unusual waves. In Maine, there has been some reports of the coast of Maine, or the coasts of Maine, that there were some very unusual behaviors of the sea. Those are little indicators. They are not well reported. They are not really interpreted very well by anyone. I mean, it goes almost unnoticed. But basically, you are going to have what amounts to half a year into May, June, of what one could call a larger coastal event, or a series of coastal events, of behaviors of the sea, which will eventually, over the next 2 to 6 years, I would say, lead to extreme waves, sea rises, winds, all sorts of climatic changes, extremes of weather, hot, cold, and so on. So all of that together is going on in the eye of the needle of somewhere between 4, 5, 6 months on the now, end of right now, all the way up to about, say, 2020. This is why I said that 2012 is not really where it's happening. This 2012 meme, this cold 2012, is a joke. That's another psychological operation. 2012 is just a transition moment in a longer passage of about 10, 12 years. Sorry, that took a while of me talking. Now it's your turn.
No, that was a great explanation. Now, that brings a couple of points to mind, and I don't want to give it too much thought. I'm following your counsel here. These changes that are occurring because of the astrological phenomena that are occurring can affect everyone. Definitely they're going to affect those or that which is within the stream.
Yes.
And those that create the radiant zones, and those that are the radiant zones have to be aware and have to put their attention on these things so that they don't reinvent themselves into illusions that are currently in the stream. Would you agree with that?
That's right. You see, I feel that part of being a radiant zone, part of being aware, just to be alert, aware, alive, means to also understand to some degree the planets. And then you will have a healer or a teacher who has some sort of an idea of astrology. You know, everyone can sort of have a feeling about these things. And yes, everyone has to be aware of these things going on. And of course, this will affect us all at every level, every human being. There is, however, I stopped there at the end making this little presentation, but there is, of course, also a lot of positive that comes out of these planetary alignments, because out of this comes a completely new awareness and a new beginning. So now we have to put our minds to how do we want to structure this new beginning, this chance that we have, to use the analogy again. So we have this building site where everything is going to be ripped down. We need to stand away a little bit because it's going to get a bit dusty and dangerous. There are walls falling down on us, etc. Societal structures, everything comes apart. But this gives rise to a clean piece of real estate where we can build something new and invent something that we want to do. And you are quite right, Don, when you say now we have to be superbly careful that we don't reinvent a new matrix and carry on making similar mistakes in a new way. So we have to take stock and become aware of what do we actually want to do, how do we want to live. So these alignments that are going to unfold over the next, say, 4, 5, 6 years, have in themselves the seeds of extremely optimistic, phenomenal movements in them, where we can, build basically a new society worldwide. And we are at the forefront. Those listening are now in the picture of what is possible here. So this is exciting stuff. That is beginning as the old world falls apart.
Yes.
So I was saying the other day to someone, I was trying to explain this whole thing, if I may finish this quick astrological presentation in a sense of what this all means. This is the beginning of a new cycle of which, like I said, 2012 is just one key point. We, the whole planet, as well as the whole solar system, because this is not just Earth, this is also Mars, Pluto, and beyond. There is more to this. All of this whole thing, we have currently entered this new cycle. We're already in it, of which the key point, as I said, is 2012-13, let's say the apex, but which unfolds really over the next, say, 100 to 120 years. We're going here into looking at 2160, when Uranus and Neptune will come together in Aquarius and we move into a whole new air-based, knowledge-based type of economy. So the whole human race is like salmon returning to their spawning grounds, I like to say. And this is not an individual event of enlightenment. This is a planetary event that's affecting all of us in the same way that the salmons are affected all together when they do the group mind thing. And the change in cycles is not a racial change. It is a planetary and interplanetary change, and it is also an off-world phenomenon. So some of our off-world races and friends in this whole solar system are related to us, planetary Earth humans, in the same way as, say, the Americans are related to the Europeans or to the Indo-Germanic Celtic people. And the transition we face that includes all changes we see happening on this planet, including societal changes, government changes, climate changes, etc., all of this, one could say, is the waters of the river we are swimming through to return to the point we left at the beginning of this 36,000-year cycle, of which we are now at the end. And this end is what people call the very last days or the end times, but they don't understand really what they're talking about. The end times means literally, like Krishnamurti said, the ending of time. That was his big discussion with the physicist, scientist David Bohm. And in some way we return to the spawning ground, and this is the return to our own humanity. And so all we can do is swim together, because we're in this together. And when I say we, again, I mean Earth humans, off-Earth humanoids, etc. So just as the salmon swim together, we go together through these shifts, and everyone who is part of this journey is part of it. So one can't say, to answer what many people have not quite understood due to this information or simply lack of study, one cannot say that the ones who die on the way through these turbulent waters have failed, or that the ones who have made the journey to the end have succeeded, because the journey itself is the whole voyage of mankind, and it's not the journey of an individual. So we are currently swimming through these very turbulent, torrential streams of water. There is again the analogy of the stream, and it is what it is, you know. This is one part of the journey. Just like the salmons know every part of the river they will swim on, so do we know genetically this little part of the journey, 60 to 100 years now coming. And this is a collective journey, as it is a collective return. And the events we will live through now over the next, say, 20 to 60 years are a part of this journey. So the mystery, the vast unknown, is another more hidden part. Although the unknown is the greater part of this whole journey, it is not so obvious, because people are focused on the visible, the physical, tangible effects of the world. And you see, the so-called extraterrestrials, from within this solar system at least, are not the unknown, as most people think. They are also part of the known, and they stay, although hidden and a little bit elusive, but like us, they are also returning to their own spawning grounds, to use the salmon analogy. And they're also being affected by all of these changes on their own off-world realities. So the result of all of this will be that the cycle is affecting many worlds, all the planets, the whole system, and how they change will also affect the humans here on planet Earth, of this humanoid group. And this was, in a way, written almost as a historic as well as prophetic inscription on the tablets that were found in Sumer, that were discussed by Zechariah Sitchin, who found the sentence that was written, and it said, "The gods were also affected by the calamities." And the word "the gods" meaning, of course, the extraterrestrials.
Yes.
So that kind of would end this small presentation I wanted to make about what the astrological alignments really mean now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes it very clear. Now, just to substantiate what you described when you referred to this 40-year cycle, if we go back to the 60s, starting in 1963, we had the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Then we were in the Vietnam War, and they really ramped up the war. We had the assassination of Martin Luther King, and then Jr., I should add to that, and Robert Kennedy, the former president's brother, who was running for the presidency, and the continuation of the Vietnam War. We had civil unrest. We had the civil rights movement all during this time, and it concluded basically with the ending of the Vietnam War and Woodstock and women taking off their bras.
Well, what you just described is a good description, because you will see now a repeat of that at a higher level. Now, see, there is always cyclical movements, but it's not comparable in the sense that we'll just do the same. But you will see similar things at a higher level. So to take up exactly what you said, you will see again, I don't like to say this now what I'm going to say, so we can put it kind of in brackets, but yes, we will see again, I wouldn't say assassinations, but we will see very well-known people disappearing off the scene. You have seen a whole wave of suicides, so-called suicides, of at least 7 or 8 bankers. Probably they are trying to cover the tracks of where the trillions are disappearing, etc. So you will see a wave of so-called powerful people, elite people disappearing. There will be a wave of panic, of fear inside of the elite with what's going on. And you will see a repeat of the early mid-60s due to this planetary aspect that repeats in a way the planetary aspect of the 60s. However, this time compounded with much larger, longer-term aspects, Pluto, Uranus, which are more reminiscent of a repeat of 250 years ago, which brings us back to when the American Revolutionary War started. And so you will see what is in economy almost a repeat of the Civil War. One of the aspects is very one of the planetary alignments is actually very similar to what we had going on in 1860, 1862, which was the Civil War. So one can easily see coming a form of civil unrest or a second civil war or something of that sort, together with the economy folding, etc. So what I was saying the other day, I repeat quickly, I believe we will be seeing the United States break apart, and also the European Union. Anything that has taken colossal structures will break apart into its pieces, and we will see a reorganization of new forms of local and regional governments and regional economies, etc.
In closing off this issue of the astrological implications, one wonders, and as you were describing all this, I was imagining what it would be like to be up on Saturn or Uranus or another planet in our solar system, watching and feeling the effects of what's going on Earth, having on their system. You know, it's like they're at it again. You know,
yes. I believe they whoever lives there, the humanoid, other societies, they're having their own issues too. They're going through the same changes. Those are hyperdimensional changes that affect all planets. We know from NASA and from some searchers that there are weather storms and systems, climate changes on all the planets. That proves a point that the entire solar system is affected by all of this. How the off-worlders are looking at this, I'm not so sure. Yes, they probably think they're at it again. We have a really huge chance now to grasp, and as we said in the beginning, this begins with each one, and we just have to form small groups, support groups, small networks, radiant zones, microeconomies, and become aware that we are on our own. We are having to be self-responsible. That's a good thing. We just need to know we will not rely on any systems outside. So the sooner we grasp this and transform this into action, the better. Otherwise, we'll be faced by catastrophic situations. Now, you have to understand, of course, that very few know this, okay? So we're talking here to a relatively enclosed, reduced audience. Even yesterday with Nuri, I mean, maybe a few 10,000 people know this worldwide. I don't know, but not that many people are aware of really what's coming. So you have to factor in that the populations, mass populations, will be faced with all of these changes that we're discussing in a matter-of-fact way, but they will not deal with this very well, psychologically speaking. They're already not dealing with anything too well now. And when they're faced with a complete meltdown, they will pretty much lose it. So psychologically speaking, one can then say, oh, this is a consequence of this and that, but that's not the issue. This is the energies, the energetics, the magnetic shifts and everything that's going on in the whole galaxy and worldwide here are affecting the genetics and the magnetics of the brains and the whole human circuitry. So what I always say is you have to factor in that the population at large is pretty much going to lose it. So you will see very bizarre behavior. There'll be mass exits. I mean, you know, millions of people will choose to simply pass away because they can't deal with it. So don't be surprised if you see just people basically dying, you know. I mean, I'm being realistic and I'm taking you through what is going to happen. So I want people to know who are listening to us to be internally prepared for what on the face of it will not look very good. So you have to be mentally ready to face situations that are very unusual. So you have, therefore, I'm saying, therefore, you have to make your own inner preparations first. And all of these preparations are of an inner sort. And that's what this whole spiritual talk is about that is going on around the world. We have to be prepared mentally, psychically, spiritually inside first to be able to even deal with this.
Yes.
And we have very little time. I repeat again, we have very little time to be ready, and to we will have little time to even catch up with what's going on. By little time, I mean 6 months at the most. Do you understand? It's here now. We're right now into this.
Now, in light of all of this, and let's say we create those that choose to stay and create a radiant zone. Create these scattered communities, self-sufficient communities. They're not going to be immune from the earth changes that are going to take place, whatever they should be, and they shouldn't be living in fear, but in preparation for that. Now, this came to mind when I was listening to Krishnamurti speak. I think it was the first of his last three speaking engagements that he did in India. And the birds in the background, especially the crows, were talking and chattering louder than his voice. And
that was superb. I know which video you mean.
Yes, I understood. My understanding was that the birds were rejoicing in the message finally being told.
That's right. You know, you're right. This sounds crazy, but this is absolutely true. Particularly the crows, I don't know how you pronounce it.
The crows, yeah, we call them crows, yeah.
Yes, the crows are of a very intelligent kind. They function like the Celtic people. If you observe crows over a longer period of time, really, which is a good exercise, by the way, to precisely get into what we're talking about, do observe crows and how they behave, how they look after their little ones, how they teach them, and how they function in small groups and then bigger groups from, like, say, 4 or 5 crows to 200, 400, 500 crows together. And yes, they are absolutely observing what's going on, and we should kind of act like crows, I say often to people. I was the other day outside doing some videos for my crystal resonators, and I went to a special place, which is sort of a sacred spot where there are a lot of crows. And there are sequoia trees that are very, very tall trees, and these crows were sitting up in the trees, and they know me by now. They know, here comes the guy with his little camera. And they kind of look at what I'm doing there, and in the middle of me shooting these in great stillness in a park where there's big silence and beautiful sunrise coming up on the solstice, everything is really still, all of a sudden these crows go off, giving their opinion to the whole thing. And yes, that's what I meant in the beginning when Krishnamurti said you have to listen. You have to listen very deeply. And you're right, there is a communication, a communion going on between their world and our world. And as we begin to live a new life, we'll become aware of this and live what others call a shamanic life.
Now, there, in reference to that statement that I made and your follow-up, those of us who are in the radiant zones are going to be dependent upon communing with the earth or understanding the earth, listening and feeling and sensing what the earth is saying. Because right now the earth is screaming bloody murder for what's going on here. And often on this show, I talk about Nikola Tesla's work, Victor Schauberg's work, Royal Rife, and Wilhelm Reich, and their work has been stifled or stolen, and yet They were the trailblazers leading us to that technology. All of that technology is still applicable today, as you have demonstrated in your resonators. And I'd like you to talk about crystals and any ideas you have that people could look into to,
yes,
to educate themselves.
Okay, I believe that people are smart enough to experiment, okay? Everyone can come up with his own ideas, her own concepts. It's important to innovate. When Uranus will go into Aries in about a year and a half, it's the time to really begin new. So you will have not one Tesla or one Wilhelm Reich or one Krishnamurti. You will have tens of thousands all of a sudden who say, hey, we need to do this new. So the knowledge is around. It's genetically in us, but it's also intellectually around, hidden. I know of people, I don't want to say where they are, but they're in contact with me. I know of people who have solutions and they're preparing them. I'm speaking now of Tesla-type solutions and also Reich-type solutions. Now, I'm not very good at the higher technological engineering level of Tesla, but I'm more in tune with what Wilhelm Reich was trying to do. So I've applied this with crystals. So what people can do is they can surround themselves with crystals. I then began building what I call these small resonators. They are between 6 inches and 1 foot high. Some structures are 2 feet, like big ones that you can barely carry. But mm-hmm. the handheld ones are such that you can use those as healing instruments. You can use them as seeing stones. It's up to you to create a relationship with the crystals, and that help to still your mind. I believe the exercise here is about being able to go out of thought and become really very quiet and still inside and commune with the crystals, because our minds, our brains have crystals in it, and there are crystals in other worlds as well as here, so there is a communication going on at that level of the crystals. And you can then use crystals as shields to protect your land, your radiant zone, yourself, your own physical body. The best is even have them under your pillows where you sleep inside of crystals, build pyramidal structures over your beds and over your houses even, etc. Each one needs to experiment. I mean, there are no limits here to find out by yourself what works. So you have mm-hmm. to spend time, put energy, effort into figuring out new things by yourself.
Yes, that's very true. Now, in a metaphysical sense, I have a one of your resonators. It's very beautiful, and I began using it the moment I opened up the box and took it out. The resonator basically told me, let's get to know each other. and now I can set it down and I still have this connection. That doesn't mean I don't pick it up anymore. I use it. But I notice that window or that doorway into other dimensions opens up. And I see things in a much deeper sense. My creativity seems to be more intense, deeper, more focused, and more expansive. And I see I've also built some of Reich's orgone accumulators and generators, and they're great for getting rid of chemtrails and the what I call psychic garbage or psychic vampires. They don't like the energy around there, but crystals are very intelligent, and once you begin to understand them, there's this automatic flow of energy or information or inspiration or insight, even love, I have to say.
Yes, it does that, and you made a good point. It opens doorways or windows to the other dimensions. It creates this ability to move in both dimensions with the feet on this earth, but still sort of at, say, 2 feet kind of above the reality or beyond it, and in contact with that other invisible world. And what's going on now also with the magnetic shifts coming is that these veils are thinning, and so the other world, can see us closer and we can see the other world better. This will not last very long. This is a transition phase of, say, maybe 10 human years in which we're now close, and then this will separate again and become denser again, unfortunately. So we just have now this moment, but this is also seen from the other side, the moment where timeline intrusions are best possible. That's what makes it somewhat a bit dangerous. So you have to know what you're dealing with, but you're doing it very well. You're using it to enhance your creativity, to pick up on, as you said, insights, to transform into new action. So yes, that's something people should look into and study crystals and know about what which crystals can do, amethysts, citrines, quartzes, etc. There are different kinds, so you need to experiment. I have now moved on to work also with moldavite, which is not of this earth, and with gold. And I'm like creating more now jewelry-type resonators, so I'm moving on now to a new series. Anyway, everyone can do that. What I'm trying to get across here is that there are no limits to experimentation and innovation, and it's time for people to spend time and put effort into these subjects.
Now, your resonators are all different, and I remember showing the pictures that you took, beautiful pictures and beautiful resonators too. They're all different because the crystals themselves are different, and there's a certain flow I notice in your creating all of these, that each one has sort of its own personality and its own particular application almost. I think you make it and the right person comes along for it and it's just right. That's they wouldn't change it ever.
Yes, that's how it happens. They are on two websites, on passage11.com and also on lightseeds.com, and people look at it, and now we have begun making videos of them to show them in 2-minute, 4-minute clips so you can see them in the light turning and twisting and on architectural background, on trees background, so you see what you can do with them, kind of those are silent videos. And people look at them and they feel drawn to the one that wants them. That is a very interesting phenomenon, how people actually choose the one that they then want to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the first series was, I lost count, about 75. And I've got now maybe another 40 or 45 left out of the first series. I do them based on planetary alignments. I construct them at certain times, in certain lunations. Now, this new series was with the solstice, which was this 250-year rare alignment where the sunrise on the solstice three weeks ago, was actually in line of Pluto. So to have Pluto and the sun in the first degree of Capricorn, you only have once every 250 years. So that makes this resonator series that's coming now really something special. And I know that when you put these resonators outside in your backyard or in a tree situation, you actually will be able to capture the energy of the planetary alignments. And in addition, in my case, I know that we have also an input from the off-world. We have the Nordics in their crafts that are beaming energies at them, so to speak, charging them up. So you have one of those with the little thunderbolt around on the top. And that one was certainly charged by those crafts. I know this sounds way out there, but that's the way it is.
No, I sense that. I know that, and I see that. And I feel that. So you're not crazy. Or we're both crazy.
It's going to be so that only those who think outside of the box will be successful. I mean, that's bluntly put, that's a fact. Only when you're able to see through these veils and understand with the third eye that you're in contact with off-world communication, are you going to be able to deal with what's coming. That's a fact. So, you know, people can take it or leave it, but there is a communication going on with others, and they're looking at us. and they're sort of waiting and figuring out and saying, you know, are you there? Do you get it? And so yes, this is the new time, you know. We've been waiting long enough for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Michael, I named my show Evident Footprints, and a lot of that was inspired by the research that I do, because I approach it from a metaphysical perspective first before I go hunting out the facts, which are really just to present to others so that they can see. And it's not to prove that I'm psychic or that I'm intuitive, but these footprints are everywhere, and they also lead into the future, in a sense. We tend to think of footprints as something that has happened, or as Krishnamurti points out, what is known is always in the past, and when you're operating in the past, you're operating from ego. And so we're talking about now moving into action. We're into a state of being. Humanity is made up of human beings, not human has-beens.
That's right. That's right. People have to understand that they operate usually from the known. And the shift, the biggest paradigm shift that's coming really, is that we're going into the unknown. And so everything that's based on the known, you can just as well forget. That's what he meant by saying thought cannot cut it, because thought is based on time, or is time. Thought is time, and that's the known, and everything that's known is not the truth. So if we want to make progress, we have to venture into the unknown. You're mm-hmm. right, and your footprints, you're absolutely right, they actually point to the future and may actually come from the future to us.
Mm-hmm. Now that is deep.
And it's true, it's so, you know, we are now in this time shift where we are able to connect with the future.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've experienced that. And on past interviews, I've described to you my own experience standing in two different vortexes a couple of hundred yards apart on the same property, basically, and actually having a metaphysical experience where I was seeing another dimension.
And I remember that very well, yes. Explain that again.
Well, I knew the vortex was there, and I just walked right to the spot where the vortex was and stood in it. I was looking at a mountain which was, former Anasazi Indian sacred land. They had many rituals and ceremonies there of a spiritual nature, we'll say. And there was an energy vortex on the mountain. Now, I was unable to climb the mountain, at least because of the clothes I was wearing that day. I wanted to go up there and sense that. But I know that there's one on the mountain. And there were two other ones. One was inside the a conference center, and the other one was on an outdoor lookout patio that had a view of the whole entire valley and all the surrounding mountains in that area. This was in Arizona. And the property also happened to have probably the largest aquifer in the state. And they had searched for the source and couldn't find it. It was a very unique property. So I'm standing in this vortex, and instantly I can feel the energy swirling around. And I described to you, it's the same feeling you got in the Chateau de Chillon.
That's right. I know what you mean, where you really are able to walk through the dimension into the future.
Mm-hmm. In the video interview, it was the first one that you did with for Project Camelot with Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan. As you were sitting at the window talking, I could feel the vortex.
Yes, that's right. Actually, the camera captured the whole thing. That's right. People can see it. People who are in tune can actually feel it.
So I absolutely knew that you and I would eventually meet and have these discussions and communicate, and work together in this respect?
Well, we continue this together. You know, I don't mind with you to do this on a more ongoing phase, and I had kind of predicted to you over a year ago that you will become more and more successful at what you do, successful in the worldly sense, in the sense that more and more people will listen to it and more audiences will tune into this and understand that what we're discussing is really relevant, and if it is of help to them, this will lead you to be able to do bigger shows more frequently and reach out bigger audiences. So I'm all for continuing to do this with you, if you want, on a monthly or bi-monthly basis.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure the listening audience would love it, too. And BBS Radio would.
That's good.
Well, that's good news. There you go. Hear that,
okay,
folks? Now, in respect, going back to the vortex, just for a moment, as I looked at the mountain, I could feel the vortex that was at the mountain, standing in this, on the patio vortex, and you could feel the energy coming out of the earth. It seemed to be coming from the center of the earth, moving out into space. And I looked at the mountain, and I closed my eyes, and when I opened my eyes, I saw two mountains. I saw another mountain 3 feet higher than the other one. And
yes, I hear you. I know exactly what you mean.
And you often describe stepping outside of the stream, so to speak, outside of the matrix, outside of the box, about an inch.
I'm saying that you can step outside of your thought line because it is literally about an inch from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can connect to that, that is connected to the third eye, to the pineal gland. And with that, you see, with that whole genetic makeup, you are actually then a seer. And once you realize that, which you just described, what you had going on in Arizona, or what I had going on in Chillon, which is why I look sort of like not with it while the camera is there and she's talking and asking and I'm talking away. It's because we are in another reality. We're communicating from another dimension into this real world. That's why we look kind of a bit absent, but we're in contact with something else.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have this experience once or twice, you are able to not recreate the conditions for it, but you will remember what does it, what are the elements that bring you sort of into that state.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when thought stops and it gets silent around you. But you are listening, you are hearing what's going on, you hear the boat going by on the lake, or you hear the birds, and still you are in contact with that communication that downloads information into you that you can on time communicate with, you know, human language to others that are with you. Once you are able to do that one time, twice, you can do it all the time, and you can actually be in that state continuously.
That's been my experience.
What people have to be able to do, this is what will be making people able to function, as I was saying to George Nouri last night, with 12 cylinders instead of with only 2 cylinders. You understand what I mean? So
yes.
You have to be in that state, if possible, ideally, constantly. That is not easy, okay, I have to say, because you're constantly distracted by stuff that's going on around you in the real world and that always wants to suck you back in to what is the matrix, really. That is why I was saying the matrix is not something that's imposed from outside. It's not the system or the controllers or all that that we have to give our attention to or to complain about, because it's us. This is all man-made. We did that to ourselves. This has to do with our consciousness, with the fact that we are attached to the sorrows and the fears and all that stuff. So to end all this matrix business, we have to end time, we have to end thought and fear and all that, and stay in that sort of state, in that semi, I don't know how to say, I don't have words for this, it's a translucid state that you were describing in Arizona, or that was going on in Chillon with me, and stay in that, as if possible, constantly. Then you begin to have a completely different perception of reality that you can use in this 3D world.
Yes. Now, I want to take a little bit of time to do that. I've been getting a little chat messages from our engineer, Seth.
Yes.
He's asking if we want to open the phone lines. Would you like to take some,
sure,
some calls?
Sure, yes, let's do that because we only have 20 minutes, yes?
Well, actually, we got started 7 minutes after the hour, so we're going to run. We got about a half an hour, let's put it that
okay,
way.
Okay, let's take the calls, yes.
So you hear that, folks. Michael will be happy to take any calls if anyone would like to call in with a question or a comment. And please don't ask for astrological readings. If you don't know what's going on in your life, in your relationships, there's no way we can give you the answers.
And yes, that's right. I want to say that to people. I am no longer really willing to do this kind of work. Simply, I have no time for this because my time is taken with clients where we do now what we were talking about for a while. We are creating radiant zones. We're creating new technologies. I'm advising people on real life situations, kind of in a way similar, not the same, but in a similar way as, say, management consultants would have done this 20 years ago, but applying everything that we talked about now. So I'm not doing these astrological readings anymore, and also for a reason that I became aware that it is wrong for me to do this. It's not, I should not be the one telling people what to do with their lives. That's not actually helpful to them. They have to figure this out themselves. All I can do is help them in the sense to say to them, you're the one who is the solution and you have to figure this out on your own.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a rough way of educating people, but otherwise I become a crutch for people. And plus, people can study astrology. That's not so complicated to find out a few books and read up on how your birth chart is made up and what it means, etc.
Okay. Michael, we've got a call.
Yes.
If you'd like to take a call, we have Brett from Ohio. Welcome to Evident Footprints. Do you have a comment or question for Michael St. Clair?
Yes, I do, Michael. I've been reading your websites for many years, and I'm so glad that you're doing radio again.
Thank you.
I have quite a few questions. I'll try and narrow it down here. I would like to see is I'm wondering if we're going to see climate changes in the way that I've read predictions that the four seasons are going to change into one, and we're going to have more like a summer-like climate all over the planet. Do you see anything like that happening?
Yes. This is very difficult for me to precisely say what's going to happen. I trust that we don't know. You know, the best is that we're ready for everything. First of all, we're going to have coastal events, sea level rises, huge waves, wind changes, so we will have very hard winds, 200 miles an hour, etc. But these phenomena will be all over the world, all at the same time, and in extremes that are difficult to predict. So it can be very hot one day, very cold the next, rainfalls that we never had before, storms, superstorms. Yeah, so you cannot say on the whole, is it getting colder, hotter, or what, because it will be all of it at the same time, which is going to be looking like very crazy for about, I would guess, 4 or 5 years during these shifts. And that's a phenomenon that we will be living through, and it will be discussed. It will become so obvious that it will go mainstream. I believe that people who will do very well will be the weather forecast people, and anybody to do with climatology will be new professions, because for the next few years it's going to be so wild that this will be one of the major topics, if not maybe the main topic people will discuss. I mean, even the most obtuse person will realize that something is changing. But I cannot tell you exactly where what is going to happen. That's impossible.
Yeah, I understand. Are you familiar with Noël Till from France?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I was I listened to him on a talk radio show clear back in the 90s, and the way I remember it so well, because I called in on the show and asked him, and I remember two of the predictions that he made that were etched in stone. He predicted the United States would invade Iraq in the first decade of the next century, and he also stated that we would be interacting with the star people no later than the year 2012. I feel that's one reason that the 2012 is talked about so much, is because we may be interacting with them. And I'm wondering, how much technology will they give us, and how much will they help us survive the big changes that are coming around the corner?
Yes, I understand your question. I think that the advanced extraterrestrials, in that sense, will not really help us. They want us to figure this out on our own. But there will be a more visible traffic, that is true. We will be seeing that more. So he's right that around 2010, next year already, 2011, ongoing, there will be more visible traffic. Probably fleets can be visible. You also have to understand, those that are really the advanced ETs with their advanced craft, they can't hang in our density very long. They can only show up very briefly and need to go. Plus, they know they're getting shot down by the others, so they can't just show up here and say, hi, guys, let's do... That's not realistic, you understand? This is why all of this type of traffic happens via telepathy and happens via, let's say, an advisory capacity. But they're not going to come down here and land and say, let us help you figure this out. Absolutely not. They are actually...
Okay.
And I tell you why they cannot do this, because if they would do it, if this was even technically possible, but I know it's not because of density, etc., if they were to come here and help us and then things go wrong afterwards, then they are responsible for the mess they helped co-create here. And that is why the non-interference rule still works, that the consensus is each civilization, each race has to figure it out on their own, although, as I said before in that longer presentation, we are all of us humanoids in this whole shifting change together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would add to that that they probably have tried on a few occasions to give us some technology, but it became too dangerous for those to whom they gave the technology.
That's exactly right. They tried a few times to find out that it was abused or used in the wrong way, or that the technologies that were really the good ones, such as Tesla technology or cleaning up the planet, etc., that the positive technologies were then put away and only bad ones of the greys and of the black ops were used. Although I do believe there are black operations of a positive kind around on Earth, in undersea bases and underground bases. Dr. Richard Souder and John Lear, and of course also Don Nikoloff himself, are the big researchers of this subject. So yes, they have tried, and it didn't work. That's another reason why they're not about to do this again. But the technologies are here. We have them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought we would see an end to the military-industrial complex where it would be safe for them to interact with us.
Oh, yes. Okay, later, sure. Once the whole economy goes down, the system goes down, and the militaries come to a grinding standstill, certainly. But you're looking then at 2020 to 2040. That's the next step. You were talking now about 2012. So what I'm saying is, don't expect over the next few years anything too spectacular about that kind of phenomenon.
Yeah.
Later, sure, there will be a cooperation.
I'm sure you're aware of all the new age channelers that are predicting that they're going to come down and they're going to save us and all this.
Yes, stuff. I know, but you see, they are all misguided, with all due respect. All these so-called channelers, they're still part of the Matrix. And what are they channeling? They're just channeling noise. And that noise is perhaps disinformation given to them by who knows, the greys or whatever. So I would not take any of that seriously. I don't know if you've read up on this, but I wanted to give the listeners anyway a really important hint here. You should look at the 25 answers, the 25 statements that James, the creator of Wingmakers.com, made to Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Project Camelot. Those are 25 written answers. That's a very long read. That will take you about 2 days to really go through this peacefully. Probably you may need to read two or three times. Mm-hmm. And that is almost mind-altering. He explains all of these things that we're talking about in almost pretty fine. Wait, did you read it?
No, I haven't. I'm aware of the website, but I haven't read it yet.
No, there is now. This is brand new. There is now, for the first time, an interview by James, the creator of Wingmakers, that was given to Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Project Camelot. It's in writing. That was not an audio interview. He very rarely gives any interviews. Those are 25 statements. They are on Project Camelot website, also on my website off of the front page. You can link to it. And those 25 statements are the materials that I would advise everybody deeply to read and study and get into this to really understand what we're talking about here.
Sure. Yes.
Sure. Do you think we're
well,
going to
Brett,
see a
thank
lot
you
more?
For your call and your questions, and keep listening to the show, and please call in again, if you would.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, you have a great evening. Michael, you touched upon something there that I actually wanted to go into a little bit, and that's the essence of what James said. It's really reflective, again, of Krishnamurti's teaching. And he explains some terms like the human mind system and the sovereign integral. Do you care to go into just a brief synopsis of that for the purpose of, let's say, incorporating it into what we've been talking about this evening?
Yes, I can do this briefly. This is very difficult to summarize him, honestly, and even the 25 answers he gave
give out the web address, a summary
of all of his work. So you have to understand, this is really highly advanced, intense.
Yes.
Essentially, he's explaining what the Matrix is. He's explaining that we have been here now for, you know, tens of thousands of years repeating this whole number, and that basically this whole world is, you know, layered with so much dark stuff upon dark stuff. Those are layers and layers like sediments on the oceans, and when you stir it up, it gets even more numbing. And it is so hard to summarize this. He is essentially saying we are what we have been discussing today. We're sovereigns, and we have to be sovereigns, and we have to function, like I said, on the 12 cylinders and become everything we can be, psychic, and that we are extraterrestrial by definition. It's hard to summarize this. I would really advise the listeners to go to these websites, Project Camelot and Wingmakers, and read that interview that is a written statement interview with 25 questions and their answers. Some of the answers are many pages long. And study and reflect this whole matter. You cannot really take it in at an intellectual level. For some people, some of his answers will be shocking, because he puts everything upside down, you know, about everything, precisely channelers, new age religions, all this is complete, utter nonsense, all of it. Krishnamurti used to say it's all invented, it's all made up. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes further to explain, he gives advice as well. For instance, he shows certain breathing techniques, certain little exercises that everyone can do very easily during the day. It's actually quite practical. Anyway, all I can say is please read the 25 answers he gave to Kerry Cassidy.
Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't spoken that much about your books, yet the discussion that we've entertained this evening is specifically what you write about. I found myself, I had a very unique experience, but this happens to me all the time, in relation to the opening statement I made about the stream. I went and opened up Zen of Stars to page 233, and you began speaking about all of these things in general, all the things that are going on. And I found it quite interesting that out of every page I could have selected in that book, I went exactly to the topic that I had been thinking about.
Oh, that is interesting what you're saying. I have heard a lot of comments by readers who contacted me later that the book is some sort of a, one could say, a living phenomenon or living prophecy, that yes, it answers at the moment what the person wants, or that the person reads a few pages and then changes are happening, etc. So yes, it's alive. It's light encoded with words coming from my communications with the Nordics and the guidance. And so, yes, that book is now in circulation, being talked about a lot. It's only now, 2 years later, that a lot more people are finding out about it and are using it. It's mm-hmm. also a form of a calendar which leads you on a more 3D level through the next 40, 50 years. But I've written it in such a way that it can be useful at the psychic level at these levels that we were discussing about with the vortex, etc.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got your books posted on my website. One of them's been there for, you know, since my site began on my birthday a year ago, in November, late November. And I know that we get visits there, and I know your books are doing quite well, and yet you've come out with a compendium of both Zen of Stars and Foreseen, and you call the book Light Seeds. I mentioned that at the top of the show. And would you give out the, well, anyone can go to my books page and click on the link. It's there. But for those folks that, for whatever reason, don't care to go to my site, can you give out the web address? They could go to passage11.com also,
yes,
correct?
Yes, passage11.com. So at the moment, all my sites are being transferred into another site, but you just type in passage11.com, and it will take you to one of the sites. The other site is lightseeds.com with a dash between light and seeds, light-seeds or light-seeds.com. So the point is simply that Light Seeds, the book, is 580 pages or so, almost 600 pages. It's a fat book. It's like a brick. And it is, Light Seeds is, in fact, simply the edited, updated version of both Zen of Stars and Foreseen. Zen of Stars came out in 2006 and has since been revised, edited, and advanced again new, and has been split into two books. Zen of Stars Part 1 and Zen of Stars Part 2. And in 2007, I wrote and published Foreseen, which is a standalone small book of about 120 pages. And it is, at the same time, a little bit of a sequel, if you will, of the first two parts. So it's almost a trilogy. And then in 2008, last year, I brought out a version, which is a parallel version, that is called Light Seeds, that includes all of it together. But you can have it, you can get it in components, one, two, or three, or you can get it all together. And the other best way to go, also cheaper to go, less expensive, I mean, is simply to go to Amazon.com and type in Light Seeds, or Zen of Stars, or Foreseen. And they usually show up in like a joint presentation.
Now, you mentioned 3D reality here, and I know that we were going to try to talk about that. I would just like to preface anything that you want to add in the closing. We got about 14, 15 minutes here. I would like to make a statement in regard to how I'm perceiving the general populace perception of the 3D reality. And often when I'm explaining this to a person one-on-one, to explain the concept of what three dimensions is like, I start with a dot on a piece of paper. And then I create a line, which is nothing but a succession of dots next to each other. And I stop there and I say, that's the majority of humanity right now, is that line. We're not really, because of the matrix and because of belief systems and because of tradition and all the different ways that our psyche is controlled and our insight is limited or cut off because of the attention that we have to put on all these tasks that we have to comply with. We are really not living in a three-dimensional capacity as a society, are we? And I'm not speaking about a nationality. I'm speaking about the inhabitants of the planet Earth.
Yes, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. What you explained just now is exactly the way it is, yes.
Now, what would you suggest? Because a lot of people are going to have trouble with that. They say, well, wait a minute, I see what my house looks like. I mean, it has, floors and doors and windows and stairways and vaulted ceilings, and there are different levels in the house, and I'm seeing it as a three-dimensional object. I'm speaking about our adherence to illusions. So many things that we see that we think are in our reality are really illusions. And what would the three-dimensional world look like to someone who had clear vision?
That is a very interesting question. I don't know how to go about this now. I think that, well, first of all, the three-dimensional world as seen from someone with an otherworld perception or with an additional perception does not matter anymore. That's what we were discussing when you're in the vortex in Arizona or in the castle.
Yes.
You sort of, it's not that you separate from it because you're quite in this world with both feet on the planet. But you are in touch with something else in addition, and so what you then see around yourself matters less, if this makes any sense.
So
what is happening now in the in the next few years is that, see, what very few understand this really, is that the Earth, the 3D, this planet, everything, our existence, it's not shifting to a new dimension in order to raise its consciousness or to ascend to a higher state and all of these things. And so, like I was saying about the salmons, it's not that a few fortunate ones are going to be swept along because they did something better than others, because they have a higher understanding and that therefore they are the chosen ones or any of that nonsense. It's that, again, we as a whole human family, a group, humanoid family, I include the ETs with us in this, are being prepared to live as sovereigns on this planet, on this Earth in 3D, but as sovereigns and not as instruments of this sort of mental prison that we have ourselves put in. I believe also that would be the best summary about James and Wingmakers that you asked me about.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that when man was first created, regardless of how that happened, because there seems to be quite a bit of disagreement as to how that occurred, that we were on the correct path from the beginning, or do you think that it has always just been what's commonly referred to as a learning experience?
This is a very difficult question. I don't know where it went wrong. Again, James gives a number of answers to these subjects, how this all began, how the trick was pulled over us all. Those are subjects you have to read about. I have spoken about it in writing in Light Seeds, and James addresses it in those 25 answers we were talking about. This would be now, in a few minutes, very hard to say when and where it went wrong. All I know is that we can fix it ourselves.
Yes, yes. Well, I wasn't necessarily implying that you go into a dissertation on it.
Yes, and, no, I understand.
But this is
many thousands of years ago, because we have been trying this for at least 5,000 years that I remember, maybe even in Atlantis, and we have tried any which way out of this old thought process paradigm, and we know that this did not work. We have had everything, every ascended master you can imagine, every teacher, every sage, every seer. We've tried any which way. It did not work. So we know that this is not the way to go. And so if one were to ask, well, how should we do it? Okay, that's the subject of the book, Light Seeds and Foreseen, or that is also the subject of James Wingmakers, the 25 Answers to Carrie Cassidy. That's something that the listeners must be willing to invest effort and time, and if it takes a few weeks, we still have that time to study these things and get in the flow of this awareness. And then be aware, however, that we do not have much time to keep track of all the changes that are coming now very fast, beginning now around this solar eclipse at the end of January and then the next 4 or 5 months. So, in a way, as odd as this sounds, time is of the essence.
Mm-hmm. One thing that comes up quite frequently, especially on this show, a lot of times I bring it up myself. I don't really, I've never prepared notes for my show or questions for my guests. I seek to have something spontaneous, something creative happen during the show that we arrive at some sort of a revelation or some understanding or awareness of something that wasn't there a moment prior to us bringing it up? And that's where these last two questions came from, just from the general sense of what we've discussed this evening. And yes. And we could say, well, is it important to know that? I'm sure a lot of people have questions about that, because if they're going to look at their religious beliefs or their social customs or the laws and these things that are literally rammed down our throat 24/7, they have to have something else to stand on, or something, you know, some lifesaver to grab before,
yes,
before they drown in the despair of, you mean I have to do this by myself? You know, I've always lived this life having someone else do everything for me. And that's really where we have fallen short, in
yes,
a sense.
Yes, that's right. That's your point, you see. And this is why I'm saying, in short, to say what has to happen now is, the best advice is very simple. You have to use your intuition, in simple words, and you have to remain fearless. And as everything progresses now in the next few weeks, months, the 2, 4, 5 years ahead, you have to always come back to those two things. If you have any doubt, any problem, anything, use your intuition and remain fearless. All the rest of it is sort of technical, tactical stuff about, you know, creating a radiant zone, transferring into gold and all that. That's kind of like, that becomes an evident when you are using your intuition and stay out of fear. You will know yourself what to do next. You don't need an outside agent to tell you that, either in a book or in a radio show. You know what's going on, so our next subjects can then become more advanced in the sense of practical for the times into which we enter, and we can then talk again about alignments and how we use them. But I think for now what people need to retain is use these materials that we talked about, study that, and get with it, and definitely understand that everything you knew about, or you thought that you knew about, you have to question all of it. Your beliefs, your knowledge, everything that you thought you had any clue of. And that has to be done on a daily basis. This, on a daily basis, hourly basis, we now are entering times where things are going to develop so rapidly that we have to stay fluid, very flexible in our mind to adapt. And things that we thought we had figured out yesterday may be in question tomorrow. Understand? So we have to be totally open and not stay fixed, believing or thinking that we know something. Again, that which we know, that's already past. We must not function from the known. Mm-hmm. We have to go into the unknown and function from within the unknown or the future. That's the whole paradigm shift. And I know that this is very hard to explain. It's basically putting upside down anything, everything that we felt we had a clue about, you know?
Yes, well, part of this matrix has been bogged down, and I don't use the B-O-G in the sense that Cliff High does, but a double G there. We've been bogged down in time, and I find myself responding to, this is the moment to do this. I don't pay attention to what time it is or what day it is. I have to be aware of time in terms of being ready for my radio show every night, or for business appointments, or activities that are in within the matrix, following the timepieces, the clocks, the watches.
Yes, that's the physical time, as opposed to the psychological time. You've understood this very well. Yes.
Yes. We've got another call here. If you want to take one more.
Yes, sure.
Before the end of our show. We have Andrew from Wisconsin on the line. Welcome to Evident Footprints. Do you have a comment or a question for Michael St. Clair?
Yes, a comment and a quick question. I came upon an audio video on YouTube regarding a caller who called an Art Bell show in 1997. He claimed that he worked for Area 51, and he gave a warning, I guess, to the audience, but for the first time in history, the transmitter was cut off on the Art Bell show. And again, this was in 1997, and now it's on the internet, on YouTube. It's called A Frantic Caller, and this person was pretty frantic, and he was telling or trying to warn the audience of Art Bell that he worked for Area 51 and that the military has been infiltrated by extra-dimensional beings, and that they claim they're aliens, but they're not what they claim to be, and that the government knows about it, and they know about the disasters that are coming, and they're not warning the public about it, and that they want the disasters, I guess, to come to destroy the large population centers that would make it easier for them to control the rest of the population.
Now...
Hello, yes?
Yeah.
Lee. Yes?
Demons? Is that correct?
I could not hear you. You were cutting out, and I hear an echo of my voice back at myself.
Okay.
Okay. Michael, he's asking if the beings that took over, according to a caller into the Art Bell show some back in 1997.
Yeah, I heard about that incident, yes.
Okay. He's asking if you referred to those beings that took over Area 51 as demonic.
Actually, yes, one could say that. I never use that word. I don't like to use it, but I can end this by saying the best material about this whole subject, and Area 51 is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, the real stuff is elsewhere. That's just for the tourists to go look at it.
Right.
But the best book that you can read about this, it's a classic now. It's called Operation Trojan Horse by John A. Keel. And what you have to understand is that this is like a phenomenon, and that morphs and will adapt to what you believe and what you think you know. And, you know, if you want it in this way or that way, they serve it to the world in any which way they want simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So the best is to really move away from that. That's part of the Matrix also. Mm-hmm. And it's almost entertainment, and it's actually irrelevant. When you really deeply look into this, it makes no difference. What is important is what you do now with your life.
With George Norrie, what exact wording did you use then? Because I thought I heard you talk about in that way.
What I used yesterday with George Norrie?
Yeah, about the extra-dimensional beings. What you described.
No, I was talking about the Nordics. We never talked about the others. We were talking about the guidance that is a operating system-type consciousness throughout the cosmos that guides the Nordics and myself, because the ETs of the highest level also use a guidance. They're plugged into the same type of consciousness as we are. They just use it differently than we do.
Okay.
Yeah, if I may add something to this conversation, I think we must be conscious that a lot of disinformation is put out there to produce fear.
This is why I'm saying to read John A. Keel's book, because most of this is all nonsense anyway, and it's irrelevant. In addition, you're wasting your time looking at these things and giving it attention. You have to put your attention to something productive, you know, that gives positive results in your own life.
Okay, well, thank you for the answer.
Well, thanks for calling in, Andrew.
All right, take care.
Well, Michael, we've come to that time where we're out of time, but we can always create more time.
Yes, yes, we'll do it again if you want. And also I want the listeners to know that tonight this show that we had took place in Void of Course Moon, which is sort of a strange moment when the moon does no longer make any aspect. And that could explain this sort of bubble in which we talked. I believe people will have noticed we're inside of almost a bubble where you feel like there's no more gravity in it. So we'll see what this show will do, but we can do it again.
Oh, yes. I would look very much forward to that. And we'll be in touch, and you're welcome to come on the show anytime, as long as it's during the hours that the show is broadcast.
Great.
So thank you for being on Evident Footprints. I want to, again, remind the listening audience, visit passage11.com. That's Michael St. Clair's website. You can see his book. There's a short preview on my directlightproductions.com website. Just click on the link at the top of the page. Every page has these links, by the way. Click on books, and it'll take you right there. All his books are listed there. You also have the Resonator book, which we didn't mention. What is the title of that? It escapes me at the moment.
It's called The Art of Time Travel.
That's right. Okay.
It's a little brochure. It's about 30 pages. It's basically all pretty pictures. It's full color.
Mm-hmm. I'm so enthralled with the images in there and just using the Resonator that the title escapes me. Plus, I've been time traveling, so...
We are all time travelers.
Yes, that's true. And the star people that we speak about are us as
yes.
well.
Yes.
We want to underscore that. Michael St. Clair, it has been an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you on the show tonight. We probably set listening records, and I want to thank everyone that tuned in. Please tune in to many other fine shows. By the way, we are going to have Dr. Richard Souter on the show around mid-month. So I think the 19th he'll be on the show. And every Friday I have Jim Murray on, who is a scientist, very much like Nikola Tesla, very, very aware man, and he's worth listening to the show as well, and many, many other great guests. So I'm very proud of the stable, I refer to it, of guests that come to this show to reveal the truth and to empower people. And I thank you for the work you're doing, Michael. I'm sure the whole planet is rejoicing right now.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Well, folks, you heard it. And if you're not a subscriber to BBSRadio.com's archives, consider doing it. You can download all the shows on the network for a nominal fee. And you can do that by trying to access the archives, and it'll direct you to a page. You can do it on a trial basis. I believe it's a monthly basis, or you can extend the period up to a year. And that includes all the archives of all the shows, and we have many, many great shows on BBS Radio. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible here on BBS Radio. Seth for the engineering tonight. Great sound, Seth. Keep it up. And most of all, I would like to thank all the listening audience, especially the new listeners. You're welcome to come back anytime, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Pacific Time, 1 a.m. Eastern. And I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.